This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Club Champion, home of some of the world's best fitters, over 50,000 club and shaft combinations, and all the latest technology. Club Champion is the ultimate when it comes to getting fit for golf clubs. With plenty of location options and new stores opening as we speak, you're probably quite close to the most robust fitting you have ever experienced. Visit www.clubchampion.com for more info.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, my golfing friends, to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week from Tour Edge is Mr. Matt Neely. How are you, Matt?
Good. How's it going, Dan?
I'm doing great. We kind of talked a little bit in the pre-room, if you will. I'm off a weekend full of golf. We like to call it like those little weekend benders. Shout out to all the THPers who joined me at the Bourbon Bash down in Kentucky. I want to get to know a little bit about you first and share that with everyone. Where are you coming from? What's a little bit of the backstory on Matt Neely?
Yeah, sure. First of all, your Bourbon Bash sounds a lot more fun than my weekend. I was up in Wisconsin at water parks with my three-year-old listening to children scream. So a Bourbon Bash through Kentucky golf and drinking bourbon sounds way more fun than my weekend. Still good. I love my kids and everything. So.
I'll get you the link for next year. So
yeah, awesome. I'm in. So background. So I'm an engineer by training, mechanical engineer. Went to school in upstate New York. Played Division III college golf, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. But I grew up in Southern California, in Carlsbad, actually. So about, I don't know, 10 minutes away from TaylorMade, Callaway, Titleist, everybody. So when I went to school for engineering and kind of found out that there are people that design golf clubs for a living, as a golfer, you know, I picked up golf in maybe seventh or eighth grade and was just really into it. I was a pretty big gearhead growing up. I kind of started on Golf Opinions and then Bomb Squad Golf, rest in peace on those forums, and then kind of went through my time as a little bit of an equipment nut. But just, you know, tried finding a job in golf right out of college. They're kind of hard to find. So did something else for a while, but kept applying. And I got my start in golf at Adams Golf. So I was at Adams for around 3 years, kind of in the middle there, TaylorMade, purchased Adams Golf, and then eventually closed down operations in Texas, but kept a few of us in R&D on board. So I moved to Carlsbad, moved back home, but I had left my wife or fiance at the time in Texas and got a call from Nike Golf. So it was a really good opportunity, a little bit more of an expanded role there. So I made the move to Nike Golf. And then unfortunately, after about a year at Nike Golf shut down. So after that, I kind of decided maybe I'll get out of golf for a little bit. I had an opportunity over at Yeti Coolers, which was a super cool company to work for. A blast, but kind of always had the itch to get back into golf. And, you know, eventually got a call from the folks at Tour Edge about 3 years ago to come and kind of head up our research and development or product development efforts here. And it's been an awesome 3 years. Pretty crazy, but a lot of fun.
And the streak of the golf or the company's closing is coming yeah. in, which is great.
Yes, knock on wood here, my big wood desk, but knock on wood. You know, to be honest, you know, I started October 2019 or so. So about 4 months or 5 months into my time at Tour Edge, we had just moved up here to Chicago from the Texas area. COVID hit and I was getting a little worried about things. You know, it was very uncertain when everything was closed there, March, April and May. But then kind of obviously this big golf boom kind of came as it was kind of something that folks were able to do. And our warehouses were empty of product because, you know, we really fit a really nice niche there. And, you know, of course, everybody's warehouses were out, but we have, you know, a range of product from down, you know, down to our cheap package sets all the way up to the premium gear. So we're kind of able to have, you know, product for everyone. So things have been pretty good from that standpoint for the last few years.
You're kind of an interesting variation between what a lot of people would become when they get into golf, that you grew up in and around it and then you moved away from it to get into golf is kind of interesting. You know, all these people from companies who are in Carlsbad who are from all around the U.S. Meanwhile, you're from Carlsbad, move elsewhere. Is that kind of been a weird stepping stone and experiencing the different parts of different areas of the U.S.? Did you imagine yourself inevitably in Illinois?
No, I definitely did not imagine myself in Illinois. So, you know, growing up in Southern California, obviously the weather is pretty perfect. It's awesome. But I love being in California, but when it was kind of time to decide where to go to school, I had a few options. But one of them was in upstate New York, which is where RPI is. And it was, you know, some of the other places were great engineering schools, but had Division I golf teams. And I just wasn't, you know, quite good enough. And I was going to school for engineering, so I wasn't going to have time to, you know, be on a super serious golf team, but I wanted to play golf. And I was also kind of looking forward to, you know, moving away from home for a bit. So I moved to upstate New York. The school's outside of Albany. But it was probably October. Was the first time I ever saw snow fall out of the sky. I think my only experiences with snow were at the San Diego Wild Animal Park. In Christmas, they would make a little snow hill. So that was pretty much my only experience with snow up until that point. So I really wasn't a huge fan of the cold. So kind of when I graduated school, I was pretty much only looking for jobs, south. My first job was in Florida, you know, Texas and California. So Illinois and Chicagoland was not really on my radar at all, and certainly was one of the hardest things about the decision to kind of move my family up here to Chicago. We don't really have any ties here either, but to be honest, it's been pretty awesome. It's kind of the first place my wife and I have both lived away from family. So it's not to say that we weren't adults before, but when we moved up here, we really felt like adults for the first time, you know, without a parent that can run over on a whim or whatever. So, and the people here, I mean, I know everybody kind of jokes about it, but they are extraordinarily nice. So we've really actually liked it a lot here, other than the winters, but they're really not as bad as they're cracked up to be.
Well, when you're in golf, I mean, the winter keeps you rather busy being release season and getting things going, I'm sure. So
for sure,
that's not the worst thing. Tell me about the golf up there. I know you've seen different parts of the United States, certainly mm-hmm. from a living perspective. I don't know much about Texas, but I know a little bit about Illinois golf. It seems to be like a lot of really nice country clubs, and you have like the spotty areas where you have one of my favorite courses up there is a Lynx at Elgin, I think, which mm-hmm. is like built into an old quarry. So it seems like there's a ton of character in that region. Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, for sure. I think so. While there is like a ton of storied history in all the various country clubs here, you know, of course, Chicago Golf Club, Shore Acres, there's a lot of really, really, really good high end country clubs here. There's also it's a pretty great public golf landscape. I play the majority of my golf at Cog Hill, where they obviously had the former Western Open, and I think it's now the BMW Championship or whatever they've transitioned into. Was hosted out at Cog Hill, Dubs Dread, for a few years. They made some changes, and I know some of the players didn't love it, but it's a great course, absolutely a beating, because there's just every green is raised up. There's bunkers everywhere. You really do have to be a player that can get the ball up in the air. And it is, I would say, it's not a super fun golf course if you're not a above average golfer. I took my dad out there when he came for a visit, and I swear he probably hit 30 bunker shots that day. So, you know, he didn't have a great time, but, you know, still nice. So yeah, the golf though, there's a ton of variety. There's a lot of good, you know, links-ish style courses. Of course, having, you know, played actual links golf, I know it's not real links golf, but just a lot of variety. You also have some tree line courses. The public golf scene, even the municipal golf scene, is pretty good here. I live in Naperville, which is a suburb of Chicago, and we have two pretty good municipal golf courses where you can go, you know, walk on a weekend for under $50, which is, you know, pretty great comparing to some of the golf out in Southern California and all that. And the other thing that kind of blew my mind is how quickly the courses are in pretty good condition after being covered in snow for 3 to 4 months. I swear, growing up golf in Southern California on public golf courses, I just feel like the putting greens are just always in horrible condition. Texas, the same. I feel like Texas, yeah. You know, Texas will have, you know, a month or so of reasonable conditions, and then all the grass turns brown and it's too hot to play. And then through winter, everything's brown and looks horrible. So that is one thing. I think the conditioning of all golf courses, even the 9-hole munis that you can pay $15 to play, is pretty darn good. So that's one really nice thing up here.
Yeah. Or our expectations are lower because we're so desperate to get out there. Right?
Yes, that is true. Because when April or sometimes even May turns around and you get a 40-degree day and you're rushing to the golf course, you'll take just about anything. So that's a valid point. It could be lowered expectations.
So are you a pretty good player then, Matt? Do you shoot fairly low?
Yeah, I hover around scratch. I play in some of the, you know, Chicago and Illinois area amateur stuff. I always try for the U.S. Mid-Am each year, and usually two or three shots off. So I don't unfortunately get to play quite as much as I used to with a 3-year-old at home, but and also with the courses being covered in snow for 6 months of the year. But yeah, I think a decent player.
That's nice. In that case, we have to know what's in the bag. I mean, it's critical to understand Matt Neely by knowing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess I can tell you what was in my bag, because right now everything in my bag is unreleased.
By all means, man, let us know. Yeah,
I know. Unfortunately, I checked with Claff. I'm not allowed to talk about any of that quite yet. So that'll have to be another chat in a couple of months. Right now, or, you know, in my bag two or three weeks ago, I have the exotic C722 driver with the 20 gram weight in the front and the 5-grammer in the back. So the C722 is kind of our more players-y lineup. So C kind of focuses on, you know, slightly smaller head shapes, lower spin, lower launch. So that's our C lineup. I have the C722 15-degree fairway wood, which is our full titanium body with a huge piece of tungsten in the bottom. So kind of our low launching or low spinning, high launching, you know, rocket that, you know, some cases when the driver's not acting quite right, can just be a little bit of a driver replacement. So that thing is just a beast. A hybrid, I've got one of our C722 hybrids, 17-degree in there. Then I've got a 4 and 5 iron of our C722 irons, and then 5 through A wedge in our EXS forged irons. And the reason I've got 2 5-irons is because the C722s are a little bit stronger than our forged stuff. And because they're kind of that hollow construction with the, you know, super high strength stainless steel face welded on, they are just ball speed monsters. So if I went from the 4-iron to the 5-iron, I'd have a massive gap in there. So, and then, our EXS forged wedges, 56 and 60, and then one of our new wingman putters, I play the 703 model.
Okay. So I want to talk about a couple different areas of your product lineups, and certainly we should talk 722. I mean, there's a lot of excitement out there about what it produces, especially when you start to talk about getting the right optimization between spin and launch. I know you've got some great characteristics built into the face as well. What is it about this product that's improved over the last couple iterations? I mean, there's huge expectations going into the 22 series.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, in 721, I think we did a lot of things really nicely. I would say some stuff was maybe lacking from an adjustability standpoint and perhaps cosmetics. It was a little bit simpler. So, you know, we really kind of looked at upping that portion of things. And then I would say the other thing that we, you know, it wasn't necessarily a miss, but it was something we realized out on tour very quickly, was we kind of designed the C721 lineup to be, you know, pretty players oriented. The driver was a beast for folks who could swing, you know, 110, 115, 120 plus. It was just a really high launch, but super low spinning product, which is kind of how it was designed. But then when we got it out on tour, particularly where our focus is out on the Champions Tour, we found that we were kind of missing a few of the guys out there who really needed a little bit more spin, something backed off just a little bit more. So that was kind of where we introduced the E side of the lineup. So with 722, it was our first range within the Exotics family where we kind of took this two-pronged approach where we had the C side of things, which is kind of our, you know, more players-y stuff. So it's a little bit harder to hit, slightly smaller head shapes, deeper faces, CG positions that are a little bit further forward to kind of give some bit a bit of lower spin. And then we kind of branched off with our E series, which are kind of everything designed to, the drivers designed to the maximum USGA window at, 460 cc's, really high MOI, but still in very nice shape. So not quite like our hot launch E lineup where, our E lineup in hot launch is like, offset and super draw bias. We dabbled a little bit in that with the E lineup in E722. But not quite so crazy, where this product was going to be a turnoff for somebody who is a passionate golfer. And I think the thing we saw was out on tour, we've got a pretty good mix of C and E product out there, drivers, fairways, hybrid. So, some of the guys like a Tim Petrovic, he's going to be all C stuff. He plays C driver, C fairway, C hybrid. Scott McCarron, those guys who are high swing speed guys who are really needing to move the ball. But then, some of the slower guys like a Bernard Longer, they're kind of gravitating towards the E product. And so that was one thing that we found of branching the product out into C and E that was kind of a massive improvement for us was, having that, a bit of a range. And I think, we've gotten that same feedback from our fitters and the our reps who are outfitting people, the folks from PGA Tour Superstores that we have contact with. That has been really nice to kind of have this two-tiered approach to our lineup. So that's kind of been the biggest improvement this year from last.
So I'm going to ask a question that I think is going to be challenging the whole mechanics of the E and C. You mentioned having to close the gap or at least introducing a secondary component to your tour level product. And I'm wondering how hard is it to maintain only two options from that experience? Have you pondered going deeper with the lineup and saying like, this is for your better player who needs a bit of extra spin, or is there an understanding that that gap's close enough?
Yeah, for sure. And so that's part of the reason that, in the C driver, we kind to kind of do that, we introduced dual weights on the C driver. So there is adjustability there with, so the product, when you buy it, it comes with a 20 gram weight in the back and a 5 gram weight in the front. And so where that is with that little bit further back CG position, it's kind of right in the middle between where we were at with C721 the year before and where we ended up positioning E. But when you swap the weights, you kind of end up back where we were with C721. So we still have that really, high launch, but super low spin product. So that was kind of our way of, bridging the gap there, because we still wanted to capture that consumer that really liked the C721 driver, because it was, kind of unbeatable for some of those really high swing speed guys. And, we saw that with a lot of our testing. So we didn't want to give that up, but we kind of wanted to have something in the middle. Of course, from my standpoint, I wish we could have, 25 different product ranges. Right. And, we dabble in that sometimes, particularly for tour, whether it's bringing in a part that is, that is the C722 driver or the C722 fairway, but we do something in the internals that's kind of unseen just to hit a target for a certain player or something like that. We've dabbled in that. And it's also something we had done in the past with our pro lineup of products, which we didn't end up doing that this year because we felt the C kind of, accommodated all those golfers with head shapes. But it's always something we talk about, do we want to do this limited release in the middle of the year of something that's, kind of bridges the gap or something that's even crazier on the player's end or even crazier on the extreme end. But we of course get into the skew management problem, and being Tour Edge, we're not quite as massive as everybody else. So expanding the lineup in our Exotics product, it's already doubled from last year, and then so the thoughts of tripling it or quadrupling it can get a little crazy. But they're always in the back of our minds, and as we get the feedback from the field, we always are thinking about doing those things.
So, what is that like when you modify the internals? And I want to kind of build this up by saying that we understand the concepts of things like hot melt, where you're positioning different materials inside the product, which not only changes the overall experience from a spin perspective, but also a sound perspective. How much different is what you're doing when you mention adjusting the internals to accommodate a singular player to something like a hot melt?
Yeah, for sure. So if we were kind of to rely only on hot melt, you know, we'd have to, we'd lose a little bit of our adjustability from, you know, so of course, so we could just, and we've done it in the past, and this is one of our key levers that we have out on tour, you know, so instead of a 20 gram weight and a 5 gram weight in the C driver, we might bump it down to a 15 gram weight and a 5 gram weight. And if a player is either struggling with turning it over too much, or they want to see a little bit more of a draw, you know, that's kind of where we have that little bit of a lever to pull as far as, you know, hot melt. So we are kind of doing the same thing that we are with the hot melt, but on some of the products, we kind of end up weight constrained. And that would particularly go for the fairway woods, where we only have a 10 gram weight in there. So for us to be able to pull it and put a 2.5 gram weight in, you know, sure, we have 7.5 grams of hot melt that we can mess around with, but we also have some discretionary mass in there that we could do a different internal tooling that would allow us to kind of move it to one side or the other and kind of get some of those extra performance characteristics that we can't with hot melt. The other problem that we have with hot melt, and once you get, you know, we find with once we start jamming in more than like 5 grams of hot melt, and if we're talking 7, 8, 10 grams of hot melt, it does diminish the sound. There is, of course, a sweet spot with hot melt, and a lot of folks would love to just pump their drivers full completely of hot melt, and they love that dead sound. But you got to be very careful, because depending on where it goes, you know, you can end up with a really dead, thwonky sound that, you know, I think most people would say, ooh, that's not great. So that's the other problem with, you know, trying to do too much of that via hot melt. So we kind of use hot melt for fine tunability, but we don't like doing it where, you know, we're pumping in 10 grams of hot melt. So that's where we kind of look at the, you know, internals of things. And also doing that stuff with internals really helps us with our findings, you know, so we might have a product that we, and this is kind of more of an R&D thing and not even, you know, exotics or tour related, but yeah, we might have a tool from 2 or 3 years ago that's sitting in China that we aren't going to do anything with. But we do have some crazy idea that we want to test. We can go back and kind of modify that tool, whether it's the externals or the internals, to add some different type of ribbing, to put weight in some crazy location, or just do something very different that we haven't tried in the past that, like, we're not all in on doing in an actual prototype, but we can kind of test it on this, like, halfway, you know, prototype and a half. So that's kind of one of the cool things that we can get a lot of really interesting learnings from. We'll do that a lot with face thicknesses, with face patterns. You know, that's kind of how we were able to end up with what we are with our diamond face. You know, we're of course able to do a lot of that simulation within our FEA software to kind of get our diamond face where it is with the right spots of thick and thin areas. But the proof is kind of in the pudding with that and getting it actually on our robot upstairs in the durability cannon on the CT machine. So, you know, we'll run a number of different prototypes of face thickness at various different spots to kind of see what is working the best. So
definitely your own system at it, but every once in a while you get to have a whole bunch of fun with a product that's just kind of hanging out. That's pretty cool. I like that. And I want to dabble into the utility a little bit as well, because I am currently awful with my driver and not much better with my fairway wood. So this year it's been like an all-in experience from 16.5 degrees and up with utility irons.
Okay.
And you guys are no slouch there with the C722 utility. I think it's the lowest you guys go is about 17 degrees.
Yeah.
But the other thing I know about is your C722 irons are unreal, and they go, I think, down to 19 degrees. So what is the big difference between the two of those when someone is in that like 20 degree range and they're trying to decide what suits their bag the best?
Yeah, for sure. I would say what it probably comes down to would be the launch conditions. So, you know, for the same loft, we definitely find that tie utility is going to launch just a little bit lower. And, you know, that's kind of how it was built. The CG is not quite as far back and it's not quite as low as it is on the C722 irons. And that kind of makes it, you know, just a pretty low launching, relatively low spinning product. The other big difference, so the 722, you know, tie utility, it has titanium in the name. So it's actually a titanium face on that thing. So it is really, really hot. I think the feel is going to be a little bit of a difference between the two. And then another thing that comes down to would be the offset. So the 722, the tie utilities were kind of designed directly for our tour players. So they don't have a boatload of offset on them. The C722s don't have a ton of offset, but just a little bit more than those. But really, you know, it kind of comes down to a little bit of preference. I think the tie utility is going to launch a little bit lower, spin a little bit less. The C722 is going to be maybe a little bit more playable for your average guy and is going to spin a little bit more and launch a little bit higher.
Okay.
For the same loft.
And you said you have a couple of the C722 irons in the bag, so you're leaning more to that side.
I do. I've never really gotten along with our tie utilities. I think the tie utilities, they do have a quite a bit wider sole. They're kind of they're a little bit closer to like a hybrid from the sole width standpoint. And I just have never gotten along with it as far as performance. The face is a little bit shallower too. So I've just gravitated towards our C722s. I think they flow in a little bit better with the rest of my bag as well, as far as the head shape go, because they were kind of designed to match up a little bit with our Forge stuff. So it's less of a jarring transition from those, you know, the 2.5 irons that I have in the bag.
Okay.
So, but I've certainly played many rounds with the tie utilities as well. So, you know, and that is one of the great curses and blessings of being in R&D, is my bag is changing pretty much constantly. You know, so for the time I was out of golf was probably some of the best golf I've played, because I played clubs for that extended period of time. So it is one of the, you know, it's really cool. It's like, you know, I have a new club every month. That must be great. And it is really cool. And it's cool to do all that testing. But it's also like, you know, every one of my rounds of golf that is not a tournament round of golf is a testing round too. So I've always got something new or random in the bag that I haven't played before. And you know how that goes. It's tough to just put stuff in the bag. Of course, there's usually a honeymoon period, so especially with the driver. I love swapping drivers in and out. It's always great, you know, as soon as it misbehaves, I'll just find another prototype and throw it.
Right.
But then that's another thing. Definitely need to be careful with the various tournaments I play in, you know, USGA stuff. That stuff does have to be on the list. So it's always, I mean, make sure everything's good to go there. So we can't necessarily play the newest of the new stuff for some of those tournaments.
Okay. Well, I'm excited for you to test like a 12 or 13 degree tie utility, if you don't mind. And if you hate it, I mean, I can let you know where to send that.
Okay. Yeah. We might have to do that. We might have to fiddle around with that on some bending. I don't know if we can get that 4 degrees. Our guys are pretty good, but 4 degrees on that thing might be a little tough, especially because, you know, so that's made via brazing. So it's combo brazed with the titanium to a big stainless steel body. And that joint there right on the face is very susceptible to breakage with bending. That's why we probably don't recommend that the standard user tries to bend it. We've got jigs and things that we can kind of do a pretty good job of it, but getting much more than 2 or 3 degrees is definitely a big ask. So we'll tool one up for you.
My insanity knows no bounds of bending. So, well, you know, one of the things I really wanted to talk about, even though we hadn't really touched on the tour impact of some of these products and the bleed over, I don't want to spend the whole episode on that because I want to hear more about Wingman putters. I know you guys are really excited about them and it's worth talking about. So can you kind of lay the foundation for them?
Yeah, for sure. So our first foray in kind of the premium high MOI putter was Wingman, all black. And it did really well out in the marketplace. I think we lacked a little bit in only having one head shape available. We had three models, but they were all the exact same head shape, just different hosel necks available. So that was kind of the biggest thing we wanted to work on this year. With the Wingman 700 series that I think released maybe a month or so ago or 2 weeks ago. I don't know. I'm in R&D, so that stuff was, you know, a year ago for me. So it's always tough for me to get on the cadence with the marketing folks. So when things are actually launching sometimes. But so we kind of expanded the series this year. So we still have that really big head shape, very similar to last year, super high MOI. kind of, you know, right at the USGA limit as far as MOI goes. And that's this head shape here, kind of the big boy that's got two weights out in the back, very similar. The other big update that we had from last year is that we've gone to this silver finish with the black insert and black alignment. So that's kind of been the biggest change. It's a lot more pleasing to the eye, I think, and it provides a little bit more contrast. But then we've kind of expanded the range this year by adding in the 703 and the 7. This is horrible. So I shouldn't have even bothered trying to do this here. You can go on the internet and look up the pictures. But so we kind of expanded with the 703 and 705, which the 703 is kind of a mid mallet, still very high MOI. But a little bit smaller. And then the 705 is kind of your super mini mallet, very small, still very forgiving and super easy to hit. But so it kind of comes down to a preference thing. And each one of those head shapes is available in two different neck styles. So the odd number of each, the 701, the 702, the 701, the 703, and the 705 are kind of a standard slant neck. And then we have two double bend models, and then the 706 is our center shafted model. So difficult to just explain through here, but our website's pretty easy to navigate and understand the different models we have, but basically an expansion of the program into kind of three different head shapes.
Okay. And I think the biggest takeaway from me, just looking at visuals of the putter, would suggest that with the amount of carbon that's involved, you have this profile that effectively takes as much weight as possible and puts it on the perimeter of the putter. It seems to be the very obvious concept there, but this is all about maximizing MOI, I'm assuming.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. That's it. You did the engineering part of the job for me. That was probably the part I was supposed to focus on. Thank you. Good job. So that's kind of the goal of the insert there in the bottom. It basically removes all of the mass there from the bottom. And kind of allows us to redistribute it to the extreme perimeter of the product, kind of targeting that super high MOI. That's why multi-materials are such a big thing in the putter world, because quite often you're kind of working on, a limited canvas or a limited size shaping. That's not really a problem with the 701. It's kind of massive. But being able to kind of, fill up that whole envelope and putting the mass out as far as it goes really helps us out as far as an MOI, from an MOI standpoint.
And that's not the only thing you guys have going on. You've got microgroove face technology, which looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, microgroove face technology. So that kind of carries over from last year. We did a lot more work on the insert and what's going on as far as the hardness of that TPU insert goes. I think if we had one piece of feedback on last year's Wingman, it was that occasionally the parts would be a little clicky or a little clacky. So we brought in probably 25 different insert types to kind of find the right one that kind of worked really well with each head. And so we ended up with a durometer of TPU that was a little bit softer than what we used last year. And then those micro grooves going horizontally across the face really help us out with that, getting that pure spin right off the bat. Really nice roll.
So what are you seeing from an excitement standpoint? I mean, what's in your bag? And then I think you mentioned it already, sorry, but remind us again, what's in your bag? And
yeah, so I've got the 703 in the bag. So that's kind of the mid-sized version. I've never gotten along with the full max envelope mallet. So the 703 is kind of a nice in-between of that. I played at 34 inches. And the excitement's been great. I think folks, we've got a really cool fitting stand that's out this year. It's not quite in stores yet, but as far as our consumers go, and from storefront standpoint, they're pretty excited about having the full lineup. And then the price point of that product is also really nice compared to some of the other premium putters in the market. Off the top of my head, I'm again not in sales, so I'm not going to say what the price is because I don't want to get it wrong. But it is very competitive. Let's just put it that way. I should have researched that one before getting on. But
that's all good. They're all $199.99 right on the website,
nice.
touredge.com.
Cool. Yeah. And, you know, that kind of goes for, you know, that's kind of the most interesting thing with our product. You know, as far as the tech and performance goes, it's all stacks up right there with all the big guys. You know, we've got a robot that we just wear out doing testing and, you know, we're right there. And that's the reason why we've got such a great presence out on the Champions Tour is because the product really does stack up against everybody else. But from a price standpoint, we are, you know, definitely very competitive compared to some of the big guys. And I think that's, you know, obviously been one of our, you know, things that we hang our hat on, but, you know, it really doesn't go. We don't really spare any expense on the product, you know, but we're able to kind of cram a lot of technology into that kind of because we run pretty lean ship here at Torridge compared to some of the big guys. So that's really one of the most exciting things about being here is being able to give some really good product out there at really good prices.
Yeah, it is an interesting point you make there, and I'm not sure how much depth you can actually take this question to, but when we see some of these prices, and they're getting more and more aggressive as the years go on, is it a challenge for you internally to discuss being either too cheap or too expensive? You know, I've always heard the idea, and this is golf balls that I'm referring to right now, so it's not really directly related, but they say, I've heard the concept many times that if you price this here, people won't respect that product.
For sure.
And it's like, man, that's a really hard thing to accept, especially as a consumer, because it's like, I want you to price your golf ball there. That seems really fair to me. Meanwhile, you know, they're trying to match the quality and associate that at a price level. So when you come out with a product you find is equally as valuable, equally as efficient, equally as beneficial to the golfer, how challenging is it to you to maintain that identity as a place that's willing to offer up a great product at a reasonable price?
Yeah, for sure. It is a massive challenge in every one of our meetings that we come to. And I'm like, all right, well, here's the price of the product. You know, where can we price it? What's the rest of the market doing? It is always extremely challenging because, you know, we've kind of put our stake in the ground as being, you know, a great value as far as golf goes. Now, of course, prices of everything have gone up. So that's why a lot of prices, even ours, have increased year over year. It keeps happening. But it's always, you know, can we go higher? Can we go higher? We never really do that just for the sake of doing it for perceived value. Of course, there is a price that could be too low for an exotics driver because it is a very interesting point. You know, like you said, with golf balls, if a golf ball performs as well as a $40 dozen of golf balls, but is $20, are people even going to buy it because it's a $20 golf ball, you know? So it is definitely a very interesting point. And we definitely have those conversations. It's probably more in the hot launch world that we really fight those, you know, because the hot launch product performs really, really, really well. You know, particularly if you stack up shafts, you know, with exotics, with everything out there on the market, because it's really good. But you know, that product is kind of designed for value. So it's always a question like, you know, if we go higher, you know, can we afford to go higher? Will that push it out of that value range or will it create more interest in the product? Are we too low? So the good news for me is that I'm in engineering. So those decisions are made down the hall by somebody else. So
I got you. But when you look at the brand yourself and you see Hot Launch, I mean, it's a pretty wonderful way to get an introduction into golf without by being able to purchase a new product without taking the huge leap, I guess you could say, going to a full price, you know, the typical products that people are talking about all day long. So do you feel like Tour Edge benefits from that identity? If we have a stepping stone into golf, and then once you feel like you've either achieved something or gone beyond that and want to invest deeper, please continue with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that we saw through COVID. And I kind of mentioned that earlier, like, you know, we were positioned really well, you know, with kind of a lot of our focus being on commercial, which when I say commercial, that's like our bazooka stuff, like, you know, a full bag with a package set and a driver and all that stuff for a really great price. That was what a lot of people were like looking for in COVID because they were just picking up golf for the first time. We've had a lot of people that have transitioned from that set, you know, and after 2 years, they're just ready for something a little bit better. You know, they don't have to dive into a $600 driver, though. we kind of have two separate options for them to make that graduation. You know, there's the hot launch product, you know, that we have, you know, drivers in the 200s, and then our exotics product, there's drivers in the $400 world. So, you know, that has been huge. You know, we've got a lot of people that call customer service and they're like, okay, I've got a hot launch, you know, C521 driver. I've been playing a lot. I feel like I'm ready to move up. What's the right product for me? And, you know, it is kind of that stepping stone through the Tour Edge world. So it has been very helpful to have that.
I love that. Well, there's one more thing I want to talk about. And you addressed that you had a limited amount of time to talk today purely because you're about to go golfing. And you're not just going to play. Actually, before I do that, can you say going golfing or do you have to say I'm going to play golf?
I am a person that says golfing. I think I know there's a massive war. There's a lot of grammar police on Twitter that hate golfing. Yeah. And I know it's not in the dictionary or whatever, but I am I'll say I'm going golfing. So
love it. Well, you are going golfing today, but it's not just any traditional thing. You have some sort of league with the company?
Yeah. So this summer we started a golf league at Tour Edge. It's been pretty informal. It's kind of our, we obviously all play a lot of golf here. You know, we at least try to when we can in our limited golf season. But so this has been the first year we've kind of had a formal golf league. You know, we play a course out here in the West suburbs, nine hole golf league. Occasionally we can try to squeeze an 18. Now light's getting a little less, but yeah, so we've got a golf league. I think there's usually, you know, we've usually got 12 to 16 people. Which is pretty awesome because our, you know, in our office is, you know, it's probably, it ranges from 20 to 40% of the office is out there playing golf on Tuesday nights sometimes. So it's a lot of fun. We always try to bring out some new product for everybody to hit, mess around with, play, do closest to the pin, have a few beers, go to Buffalo Wild Wings after a lot. So it's definitely a blast. And that's one of the cool things about Tour Edge. You know, we're all I know it probably gets used ad nauseum, but a big happy family here. So we get to do a lot of cool stuff like that. So
yeah, it's all fun and games until someone calls you on whether your products you're using that day are USGA approved. Are they?
Yes, for sure. I get that a lot. People are always looking in my bag to see what I have, you know, because we have a lot of golf gearheads here. So I always have to be careful when things can be shown or not. Usually I'm pretty liberal with what I'll show to folks, but sometimes it's just too crazy of a prototype. So I'll got to keep it double head covered or taped up extra secure. So I don't get too many sneak peeks at stuff.
Yeah. I'll bet you stay fairly close to your cart when you're out of the golf course with those types of products hanging out in there.
Yeah, for sure. I always have to make sure I've got a myriad of head covers in my in my trunk to throw on the clubs. I have to be
iron head covers. There you go.
Yeah, I have to be very careful passing off my gear to the cart folks.
Well, you heard that here first. Matt Neely, he uses iron covers. He says golfing, not plays golf. I mean, it's just falling apart here at the seams. But you know what? I love it. I love the anarchy that comes with all this. And I'm kind of sad that it's just the first year because you can only create so much bad blood within a golf season. So I'm looking forward to like year five, the rivalries get built, pure hatred abounds. You start to section off your groups and all that.
Yeah, for sure. This year was probably too friendly. You know, it was fairly casual. So next year we'll have to really up the ante as far as competition goes so we can create some of that really deep seated hatred between some of the groups.
Yes. Do we have like some sort of big trophy that everyone's playing for at the end of the year yet or no?
No, we need one. We need to, I think those are the things we've got to really focus on next year. Yep.
Maybe fancy parking spot, yes. You know, front row seat in all the meetings. That'd be great.
Yes. I like that. I like the parking spot because we are very parking with some of our growth. We've added quite a few employees over the last few years, and parking is at a premium at Tour Edge. So a reserve spot would be huge. So yeah, we should definitely introduce that this year.
Love that. Well, hey, Matt, it's been super fun to have you on today. Do you have any questions for me?
No, I think I'm good. I'm all questioned out. So, what's your next golf trip?
Yeah, so after Kentucky, man, I'm trying to think. I've got something set up that I can't really talk too much about in November.
Okay.
And I feel like there's something in October. No, that's a wedding. No, I don't have any super fun plans, which is kind of disappointing. Maybe
Yeah, it's always nice to have something on the books.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, there'll be more about November eventually. I don't know what I'm supposed to be saying about that, but yeah, hopefully it changes, because we're back in the swing of things here with a six-year-old in school, so I need to get out as soon as I can.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yep.
So, all right. Well, thank you, buddy. I appreciate it, as always. Yeah,
It was fun. Thanks a lot, Dan. Appreciate it.
For sure. If you are golfing this weekend, please have a good time. Make it count. And check out some cool Tour Edge products. I love the T22s or the 722s, my goodness. But there's also these for if you need a little bit of support. So those and the Wingman putters, and we'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.